Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sports-ad-free. That's amazon.com/sports-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello, you lovely lot, and welcome to this week's edition of Tuesday Night Jaw, brought to you by the Distraction Pieces Network. I'm not gonna pimp Distraction Pieces this week because that's what I do every week. You should still absolutely check out everything that is on our little podcast network, overseen by our overlord, the Scroobius of the Pips. Instead, I'm going to give a shout out to Pod Bible, who have a link with us, because everyone that's on Pod Bible or works with Pod Bible has either got a podcast on Distraction Pieces or has been involved in podcasts on Distraction Pieces. And they basically shine lights onto really good podcasts that you should all check out. They've done a load recently, and I actually discover a lot of podcasts through them, because as everyone probably knows now, the podcast scene is pretty oversaturated. There's a podcast for literally everything. So it's great to have someone trying to shine a light on some podcasts that might have slipped through your net. So check out Pod Bible. They're on Instagram, they're on Twitter. I think they do a little fanzine as well. I can never remember the absolute logistics of it, but they are absolutely worth a follow on social media. And you never know, you might discover a little podcast that you've never seen before. Never seen before. It's probably more accurate. You never heard before, isn't it? Because that's what a bloody podcast is, Matt. Great start to this episode. Right, so this week's episode is... it's an idea I've been thinking about for a long time, but kept putting off because I never felt 100% comfortable in doing it. purely based on the fact that I was a little bit worried about how it would come across, I guess is the best way to describe it. Because shockingly, despite me being a bit of a gobshite, I don't really perceive myself to be very important at all with any community, let alone the wrestling community. So this week's episode is going to be some advice for people wanting to get started in professional wrestling, or people that are in professional wrestling, or just general advice, just little tips and tricks to succeed or get the most out of something that you have a strong passion for. So, like I said, I just never wanted to come across as like holier than thou, because everything I say is going to be my own experience. It's the things that I've gone through. It's the things that I've learned across the years that I've been involved. So none of this is gospel. Don't take this into the world and be like, this is absolutely what I have to do, because it's not. It's just my opinion and some advice. But I know that I have a lot more conversations these days with people asking me a few things about, you know, how to get into certain promotions or how to get noticed or any tips on when you're starting out at shows. So I thought I would just do a whole episode on that sort of thing and break it down into a few points. It's probably going to be about 6 or 7 points, and just have a little talk about some things that I have picked up over the years that hopefully is some benefit to people that are listening. I know there's a real wide variety of people that listen to the podcast. There's people that are just fans and have absolutely no interest in anything that goes on beyond what they see in the form of entertainment. I know there's new wrestlers. I know there's referees and announcers. And I know there's people that are somewhat curious bystanders on the more intricate parts of how wrestling works. So hopefully it appeals for everyone. And if it doesn't, then okay, you know, we'll see what happens. So yeah, okay, let's get this show on the road. Proper rambly intro, which is probably not filling anyone with confidence into listening to my advice about life. Don't do rambly intros. There's your first bit of advice. All right, look, grab a brew, grab a biscuit, grab anything you want. Just sit back, relax, and welcome to this week's edition of Tuesday Night Jaw. Right, so I probably should go out and kind of explain myself and my journey in wrestling, because I often forget that people know me through a few different things, whether it's as a ring announcer or a commentator, or it's sometimes the one that always catches me off guard as a presenter doing things like London Film Comic Con or video game events like Insomnia, etc., etc. So I don't know if everyone knows 100%. My backstory. It's not like an X Factor backstory, don't worry, it's pretty upbeat and pretty positive. So basically, this is my, I think it's my 16th year, it might be my 17th year in professional wrestling. I'm 31 years old, so I've been in wrestling now more than half of my life, which is both amazing and depressing at the same time. I started training when I literally just turned 15 when I went to my first training session. And then I got onto shows as a wrestler, quote unquote wrestler, when I was 16 years old. In the interim between 15 and 16, I'd built rings, I was training, I did a couple of ref jobs, never did too much, but I did a handful of ref jobs. I sold raffle tickets, I did merch, I worked the door, I was crew, so I pretty much did everything before I wrestled. Then between 16 to about 21, maybe 22, I wrestled on shows quite badly, I'll be honest with you. I was at best average, at worst bad, but I did a few things. I wrestled a few different people, and then at 21 years old I decided that I needed a bit of a break from wrestling and a bit of a change in my life in general, as you do when you're in your early 20s. So I decided to leave wrestling and take a break, and I moved to the other side of the country. I was living in Preston at the time, up in Lancashire, and I moved to Reading down south for 3 years. And that's when I kind of cut myself off from wrestling a little bit. For probably the first year, I kept in touch with everything and kept an eye out on a few things. I think I even went to a couple of shows, in and around my area. Then the second year, I really just sort of took a step away from wrestling. And then towards the end of the third year away is when I started to get back into wrestling. I've told that story a million times. Thank you very much, CM Punk, John Cena, and my mates. So then around about 24, 25, I moved back up to Manchester. And that's when my friend Sam Bailey, who's also a professional wrestler, suggested that I do some ring announcing, because I knew I kind of wanted to be back involved with it, purely based on the fact that my friends were predominantly in wrestling, but also as well that I knew that I couldn't contribute as a professional wrestler anymore, because the scene had progressed so much further than it where it was when I first debuted. And again, I'm not being humble or self-deprecating when I say that I was average at best. So even coming back from a hiatus, I would have been lost in the shuffle. And I don't know if my passion was ever purely based on being a professional wrestler. So that's kind of why I made the decision to use transferable skills. Sam said I'd be a good fit to be an announcer. And that's what I did. So I became a ring announcer at Future Shock Wrestling, which is a place that I wrestled at as well, before taking my hiatus. Then I was ring announcing for a few different places. I then transferred onto commentary as well. So I did more commentary. So I did commentary for Great Bear, Future Shock, and then it all kind of snowballed. And it got to a point where I was about 25, 26, where I just started to be a presenter for stuff outside of wrestling. So I've done a million different things. It's my favorite anecdote in the world. I've literally presented everything. I've even hosted a funeral. That's not a joke. That's a humanitarian funeral. I've done it. And, you know, I did loads of little presenting jobs and went self-employed and started to build things up from there. And then as the years went by, I got slightly more high-profile jobs in wrestling, which led to things like Fight Club Pro, which was a huge launching pad for me as an announcer. And then that sort of bled into Progress using me as a commentator, which I don't know if it's a story I've ever told, but Progress only ever used me as a one-off in their first Birmingham show, which is the show where Finn Balor turned up and Aleister Black / Tommy End came and did the show and then went off. And I think he did a match on that takeover in Blackpool. The main event was Matt Riddle versus Rampage Brown. So yeah, I was actually brought into Progress as a replacement for Glenn at the time, because Glenn couldn't do the Progress show. And it was just a one-off, and then it kind of built from there. And then it kind of just kept on snowballing from there. I've always sort of been involved creatively with stuff, whether it's just ideas for names of things, or just little ideas in terms of moments in matches or how shows should be put together and stuff like that. So I've always had some creative input, because everywhere I've worked has always encouraged creative input, which is something we'll talk about later. The one where everyone sort of started looking at me serious in terms of creative was Tetsujin 2 / Tetsujin 3, which is where Gaz and Craig asked me for some creative input, which I gave. And that kind of changed the perception of me as well as just being pigeonholed into just being an announcer and a commentator, which then in turn led to me taking the creative job at Progress as well as the ring announcing job from Jim Smallman. So that's kind of my journey. I'll fill in the blanks as we go through the points and stuff. So this is kind of what I always say to everyone, is that try to do as much as possible with, if you want to be involved in wrestling, especially when you're training, especially when you're starting out, try and do as many roles as possible. Now, I understand the refereeing job's the perfect example of this. If you are a trainee and you do ref jobs, your main concern is always I don't want to be pigeonholed as just a referee. And I've seen it happen a million times because someone just happens to be a natural at refereeing, and then people constantly want to have a reliable referee, so they constantly go to them for that. But I've also seen people do ref jobs on smaller shows, which is something I did, away from maybe a wider audience. So I really do encourage people and trainees to try every single job. Jobs that have come around sort of since I started, definitely since I started. I still remember having to watch my matches back on VHS. There you go. Is the import of social media. Obviously, it's a huge presence now. So there is now opportunities for social media managers or social media people in the day. So that is a job and a skill that is something else for you to learn. Which is a really good job to learn because it gives you a good idea in terms of how to present yourself in front of an audience or market yourself or brand yourself to a social media platform. So I really encourage everyone to get involved in every aspect of it because you will always have more of an appreciation for everything that happens on a show if you have done a little bit of everything as well as just being a professional wrestler. So, okay, there we go. There's a bit of a rambly sort of overview of where I am in the world and what I've done in professional wrestling. So I've now written out 7 points, 6 solid points, 1 final point being number 7 that will give me a bit of a jump off point, and I'll go into it a little bit further. So my first point on the list is you get out as much as you put in. So with every point on this list, it needs explaining because just as a blanket term, it can be misconstrued, and especially in professional wrestling. So what I mean about you get out as much as you put in isn't just being at every show, doing everything you can. It's also about fulfillment, and I think that's something that gets lost. So a lot of young wrestlers, especially nowadays, will travel up and down the country to go to as many shows as possible, whether that's just to watch or, for the most part, it's usually to be part of the ring crew. It's something that we do in progress. All our ring crew are from training schools from the area. So when we're in Camden, it's usually Hustle or Knuckle-Locks. When we were in Wales the other day in Cardiff, it was Dragon Pro. When we're in Manchester, it's Future Shock and Fighting Spirit. And then everywhere else, we sort of pick and choose. Birmingham, of course, Fight Club Pro and other Midlands-based places. So it's a common thing that wrestling companies do. It's also there's a few different advantages of doing that. It's a great way for those young wrestlers, whether they are actual active wrestlers on shows or trainees, to introduce themselves to people in higher up positions or the talent. It builds up familiarity and positive relationships. If people want to be negative about it, people can spin it and just be like, it's ass kissing. I don't see it as that. You have to understand the world that we are in now. I hate the term networking because it is proper kind of terminology, but that's the way to look at it. You're building positive relationships. I've had it a million times where I've met someone on crew and then a year or two later, I've seen them on a show, and because I have that positive connection with them, because either they were helpful or professional or pleasant or all of the above, I instantly sort of regarded them in a positive light as well as their in-ring work. So ring crew is something that is a really good way of building up those early relationships in your career. Now, with that said, it's easier for a lot of younger wrestlers to do this and put in more because they have, a lot of young wrestlers, between the ages of like 15, 16 to 20, 21, they've either got part-time jobs or they're studying to be, they're either in college or university or school. So they have a lot more free time. So that's why you probably see the younger lot around. So I understand that there's people with real jobs and real lives, and they are in that part of their career where this isn't a full-time job. So I understand that you cannot be at every show, and this is where I wanted to explain the phrase, you get out as much as you put in. It's about application. if you were there to do a job or you were there for a reason, it doesn't have to be every week, it doesn't have to be every show, but how you act in that moment is really important for people to look at you a certain way. Some of the people that I rely on and enjoy working with the most are people that have real lives. They have wives, girlfriends, husbands, boyfriends, whatever, and full-time jobs. And yet they're not at every show, but the minute I see them, I know there's a reliability that they have. There's a responsibility that they have. And that is a good thing to have because, again, it's that building, it's building trust up. You know, we're building teams here, we're building crews, and you want the best team that you possibly can have. Progress is a really good example for it. We've got Tate, Rob, and Big Jack, who are our ring crew. Now, they've all been wrestlers, or are all wrestlers still, but they are the best crew that we could possibly get, purely based on the fact that the way they build that ballroom and get the ring up and the staging up and everything and organize the chairs, organize the crew. They conduct the crew during the show. They're on a headset. So if we need, John needs to get a message to them, whether that's to the referee in the ring or wrestler in the ring or a crew or me or Glenn on commentary, they are an integral part of that show. So they have built up a level of trust with us. And again, it's that thing of Tate is pretty much at every bloody show in the country at the minute, which is a great thing for him because he's really trying to, you know, take a next step and try and get out there more. But I only see Jack and Rob at Progress shows. I don't live in the part of the world that they live in, but that's literally the only shows I see. But they are always there and always ready to help and always ready to apply themselves. So it's something to think about how to conduct yourself when you are in a work environment or an environment where you want to be seen as professional. Something that, you know, this applies to everywhere in the world. You know, if I go to a video game convention outside of the ones that I work for and I conduct myself in a slightly less professional manner, you know, if I'm being a disturbance or an annoyance to the show that is running, that will affect me because much like professional wrestling, it is a small world and word will get back and, you know, people will hold that stuff against you. So if you are going to watch shows, by all means, enjoy yourself. You should really enjoy this because if you don't enjoy it, then what's the point, right? But it's always have that little conscious thought in your mind of know where the line is and know how to conduct yourself within that environment and in that moment. So again, I always say to everyone at the minute, get to as many shows as you possibly can, whether helping out or watching. Try and do everything you possibly can. If it's putting out chairs, if it's working the doors. I mean, the perfect example of working the doors recently is Chris Egan at Chardon, Freuder and Friends. I went down for the show the other month, and watching Egan do the door was one of my favourite things I've ever seen because it's not a gimmick. That's what he's really like. But he has built up a relationship with the fans through that. And then when he comes out last night on Chris Brooks' final show at Schadenfreude, he gets a huge pop and a chant. And I would argue that 45-50% of him have already seen him wrestle. But he has that positive connection. And again, it's not fake. He's not doing it because he knows he has to do it or he thinks he has to do it. And he's not in character. It's all 100% Chris Egan. But he has already built that relationship up that when he comes out in front of that audience feels connected with him. Okay, second point that I've written down here in my very professional notepad is know your worth. This one is a big one. All right. I'll tell you a little tale of a young Matt Richards. So when I first started to get presenting jobs outside of wrestling, I was shocked about how much money I was potentially going to make because of the difference in terms of finances within both industries, especially the video game industry or anything geek culture. There is a lot of money in there because of the nature of the business, whether it's sponsorship, prize money, whatever it is, there is a lot more. So when I first started taking presenting jobs outside of wrestling, I never looked at myself. I always felt that I was stealing a living. I always felt that I was sort of getting away with it a bit, and I was always a bit worried that I was going to get found out. That's imposter syndrome. Everyone has it. Trust me. I've spoken to some of the most talented and phenomenally confident, outwardly confident people that still have that. That is a very real thing. So when I was taking these jobs, I was probably getting paid less than I should have been, which was not an issue, but it was somewhat of a point because I was self-employed and I should have been more aware of trying to make more money because I should value myself more. And then I still remember I did a weekend of gigs. I think it was a 3 day or a 4 day run, and I went and did this gig in Shepherd Bush's shopping center. For some reason, that's the hardest thing for me to say. And it was like a technology fair, and it was in the middle of the shopping center, and it was a really, I wouldn't say miserable gig, it was a really tough gig. The pay was okay, and I was sort of doing a favor for a presenting friend of mine who needed me to cover, basically. And, you know, I was like, oh, well, I get to work with some tech companies and stuff like that. But it was a slog of a gig, and you're in the middle of a shopping center. And if you've ever been to Shepherd's Bush, it's a big shopping center, and you're overexposed. And it was just a really, really, really tough gig. And then I'll never forget that I did one day and they gave me accommodation and they put me in a Easy/E hotel in central London, and it was essentially a prison cell. I basically had a shower and a bed and that was it. I had to pay for internet, which is fine because you have to do sometimes, but I literally had to pay to have a towel and to pay for a hairdryer. And I remember at that moment just being like, I'm not getting paid enough for this. And I went and then did a gig in Manchester, which ended up being an okay gig. But when I got there, it was a new event. So the organisers relied on me heavily in the sense that I had to create content for their stage slots. Because when I turn up and do content for stages, it's usually I have a content creator. They've written a general idea of what they want, and then I kind of put my own spin on it or apply things. Or sometimes, you know, I've worked for EA Sports in the past, where EA Sports have given me 25 slides worth of script, and we're like, can you adhere to this? I was kind of like, whatever. So I did it. But yeah, I turned up to this event in Manchester, and I essentially had to rewrite 3 stage slots, and that is another job in itself other than going out in front of an audience and doing it. And I remember being really down on myself about it. And I remember the organizer of that Manchester event actually said to me when they paid me, you're not getting paid enough. And it was just this light bulb moment in my head where I was like, actually, I'm really not getting paid enough, because if it wasn't for me holding this down and creating the content and, you know, generally just going out and doing my job, it potentially could have been a disaster or could have fallen apart. And I remember that light bulb moment where I was like, right, I know my worth now. I know how much. And pretty much ever since that moment, I've had a slow increase in pay for presenting work. And in wrestling, I started to view myself in a better light. So this isn't a case of going out and demanding hundreds and hundreds of pounds or thousands of pounds, you know, for your second match. It's not that case, but it's that understanding where you are in your journey to where you want to be, and also understanding what environment that you're in. Now, there's a lot of debate about taking no pay on gigs. And it's one that's in wrestling, which is really, really, really heated. And rightfully so, because there is a fine line between having an experience and exposure and having free labor. the best comparison I can make is stand-up comedy, in the sense that there's a lot of acts, you know, again, like, this is from an observational point of view, but a lot of comedy shows that I've been to will have the formula of, you have a strong opening act, which is a paid act, you have two acts in the middle that are, they get like a 5 minute slot, which is them just perfecting their routine, which they don't get paid for, and then you obviously have your headline act. So there's two slots on a show that aren't paid for, but it's a learning experience for these comedians that are just starting out. The thing is that, just like wrestling, it gets to a point where you have to look at it and go, okay, I now have worth to your show. I add value to your show. And this is the integral part of this conversation. If you have done more than 3, 4, 5 shows for someone for free, then I'm going to tell you right now, they're taking the piss out of you. And I will just say it. You need to have the ability to negotiate terms for yourselves with companies. I've taken free work, whether in wrestling, I've definitely taken work in presenting that I haven't been paid for. I mean, the biggest example I could probably give to with the presenting job is that I went to Philadelphia and I wasn't paid for the gig. It was actually a tryout for another company who had a stage at this American convention. And I got my flights, accommodation, and most of my food paid for, but I wasn't paid for the gig. Now, I did it because it was an experience and I got to work in America, but what also happened was I wasn't out of pocket for money, and also it led to almost 3 years worth of work with the other company, which was paid, and I was paid pretty well. So there was a trade-off there, and I think this is the same that needs to be in wrestling, is you are going to have shows where people are going to go, oh, do you mind coming on and doing it for free? And it is up to you to say yes or no. If you say yes, you're not a bad person. If you say no, you're not a bad person. It's up to you and it's an individual situation. But the thing is, the more and more quote-unquote exposure that you get, the more and more value and worth that you have. If you become a consistent contributor to a product and a show, therefore you have more value. You're a returning commodity. Let's look at it this way. You know, if you've come on and done a show for free and you've shown that you're reliable and you're professional and done a good job, and you keep coming back on doing that, and you're doing that for free, that's free labor, because you are an asset to the show. The person running the show will look at you and go, well, you're a reliable slot. So therefore you're not valuing yourself. You're not knowing your own worth. So you really need to analyze where you are. Now, this might shock people, but independent wrestling isn't the best paid thing in the world. I know, shocker, but the thing is, you still should not be out of pocket, or you should be making an asserted effort of progression in terms of pay where you are not struggling or not suffering for it. You're getting some form of reward for your contribution. Again, I know there's places that do not pay non-wrestlers, which is something that I am massively not for, because I think some of the most valuable members of your team are non-wrestlers. I know that if I was a professional wrestler and I was in there with a referee that was not paid and was completely under experience, then I would not feel safe. So therefore, a reliable referee is a valuable part of your show and you should be paying them. An announcer is a valuable part of your show. They are leading your show and holding your show together. Therefore, they should be getting paid. It's as simple as that. Now, commentators and announcers, in terms of a contribution of, say, for instance, an on-demand system, or you are releasing your content and your footage in some way that there is a profit or you are turning money, then you should be paid for that, because guess what? They are profiting off your labor. There you go. This is the thing. It's like, it's a give and take. I'm not talking about, you know, writing checks for thousands of pounds for everyone on your show, but there needs to be a fair and balanced work environment. And if you are a talent or a non-wrestler that is contributing to the professionalism or the betterment of the show, you need to be able to make sure that you get some value and reward for your contributions to it. Oh, that was a ranty one, that one, wasn't it? Hopefully that made sense. It might tie into my next point, because if it was one of these things, then I should probably own it. My next point, third point of this, is own your misses, not just your hits. Okay. It does sound like it's a Fall Out Boy lyric. I'm gonna level with you there. But there is some value to this. Okay, so misses in terms of performance. If you are a performer in any creative or entertainment endeavor, you are going to have bad gigs. I'm sorry to tell you, it's going to happen. I still have bad gigs. Everyone still has bad gigs. I'm sure the Rolling Stones still have bad gigs. It's just a nature of entertainment. The thing with wrestling that is different from other entertainment industries is that you could make more mistakes further into the past. So that if you had started in the tail end of the 80s or 90s or even the early 2000s, the exposure that especially British wrestling was getting at the time was far, far, far lower than it is now. So you could go and do a show, say, for instance, in the middle of Northwich or Peterborough or Lincoln and have a rotten match, have a stinker, have a match that you would probably never want anyone to see. But it didn't matter because either the footage wasn't being released or, most importantly, social media did not exist. We are in a social media era. It is, you can't fight it. It's just the reality of it. So it's harder for younger talent to make mistakes now because of fear, the fear of it always being hung above their head. Because everyone's filming, everyone's tweeting, everyone is looking at this footage, and it is the nature of humanity that we love mistakes and we find them amusing. You know, blame you've been framed. I get it. It's the nature of the business, but that should not prevent young talent from being afraid of making mistakes, because your mistakes make you better. They make you stronger. I got better at my job because I had terrible gigs. I have had some of the worst gigs in the world ever in front of some of the most respected, highly respected and professional people, and I wanted the ground to eat me up. First time I ever did Insomnia Gaming Festival, I had no idea what it was. I had no idea of the size of the event. My first slot on my own was a Rocket League slot with YouTubers, and I didn't know what Rocket League was at the time because it was a small independent game, and I just knew that it was basically football and cars. And we had a 10 to 15 minute delay of the game being booted up. So then I had to speak to a bunch of YouTubers that I didn't know at the time about a game that I had no idea about. And I named one of the YouTubers wrong. And I wanted the ground to eat me up. But the thing is, it made me then prepare for my job more. And I was like, well, I'm not going to make that mistake again. And that's the way that everyone else needs to look at it. It's imperative that you... There's an American term, and I hate it because it's an Americanism, but it's also got a really good, it's a good bit of psychology behind it, which is get your reps in. Get as many reps in as you possibly can because it will make you better. Practice makes perfect. There you go. There's a British swing on that. You have to go out there in front of an audience to perform and do these things to see what works and what doesn't work, or practice and perfect the thing that you want to do. So you have to go and take risks. You have to make mistakes, as much as it is a terrifying prospect for people to do. It's still a terrifying prospect for people that are, you know, professionally paid to do professional wrestling now. You know, we have it with TV tapings, you know, NXT, you know, if you have a bad match at NXT, either it gets cut or you have to go redo it, which is not a great thing for you guys to do, because you know that live audience has tweeted out footage, or they've tweeted out that you've had to do a retape, and there is a level of embarrassment there. But I promise you that you will not be a better performer until you make mistakes, to the point where I kind of want people to have a bad match. I kind of have this thought process of, I like to see people three times. I like to see them have a good match. I like to see them have a bad match. And then I like to see them the third time to see the real person. And also, you can tell a lot from people when they have a bad match. That body language, that attitude, how they say face is so important to that person's personality and professionalism. Because, again, you're out there in front of a live audience and it's going bad, and the last thing you want to do is kind of like acknowledge that it's going bad, because the minute that happens, then the minute the crowd just look at you as, well, you're not very good at your job. And it's a horrible situation. And I know I'm sitting here going, I want all of you people to go and do that. But it's there is value in making mistakes and own your mistakes. There's matches that I watch back now and it makes my skin crawl, because I was so bad and so stupid. And I know there's a lot of guys who are professional wrestlers that feel the same way. I mean, this is a story I've told a million times, but genuinely the first time I ever watched Zach Gibson wrestle, I thought he was the worst wrestler that I'd ever seen. It was an atrocious match, and it took me almost 2 or 3 years to be like, is he any good? And then we ended up teaming together in Future Shock, and I was like, oh, this guy's actually really good. And lo and behold, look where he is now. So it's the same with James Drake. James Drake started in wrestling when he was like 13, 14, and he made a lot of mistakes in his early years. And, you know, if everyone sort of went, oh, that's it, or if he didn't sort of go, all right, I've made a mistake here, and then try to improve, then he would have never got anywhere. So you have to take risks. Everyone wants you to take risks, and you're going to have bad gigs. And I can tell you now, there's nothing worse than having a bad gig and getting paid for it, because it tears away at your heart. But go out there and try stuff. And then when you do make a mistake, look at that mistake. Go, why did I make that mistake? You know, how can I prevent that from ever happening again? How can I improve on this? And really look at yourself and analyze yourself critically, fairly. It has to be said fairly, but critically. You know, it's the compliment sandwich. Find something that you've done good, find something that you've done bad, and then find something you've done good again. But be fair and critical of the things that you are doing on shows and even outside of shows as well. Okay, your next point. Learn from the people that came before you. And I've put in brackets, the good and the bad. Okay, this is a really interesting point for me personally, because now I'm an old git. I've been around long enough to see what came before me and now what comes before this generation. They are worlds apart, but this still rings true. Learn from the people that have been doing it longer than you, whether it's their mistakes or the stuff that they are doing well. So when we first came into wrestling, we did not necessarily have a generation before us that we could turn to and look to. So the people I usually include in this conversation are Joey Hayes, Danny Hope, Sam Bailey, CJ Banks, Damon Lee. There's a few different people within that generation. On an independent level, we did not have anyone that was before us that was particularly available source of learning experience. We had Doug Williams, we had Johnny Storm, we had Jody Fleisch, we had to some extent Alex Shane, but they weren't always on the shows that we were on or there to get advice from. So we kind of had to go out and do it ourselves and learn from other people. It was the likes of Ligero and Chris Travis and Spud, the now Drake Maverick, that came in from the outside, and then Martin Kirby later on, that helped it create a melting pot of ideas where we started carving out our own brand and style. This is probably going to be an episode later on when I talk about British wrestling, but I was already on shows, and at least 16, 17, until I saw British Rounds World of Sports Style Wrestling. It was a match between Robbie Brookside and Johnny Kidd. It's the first time I'd ever seen that, and I kind of had heard about it because it was on the wrestling channel and they would show all the old World of Sports stuff. But it wasn't until I saw that match live and had a chance to speak to both Johnny and Robbie to get advice from him that I saw the value and the history of the generation that they were part of and the tail end of it and what came before them. And it was Brookside that helped me think about wrestling in a different way. That door then opened the door to people like Mikey Whiplash, Dean Allmark, James Mason, all of that all-star crew that were wrestling every day of the week and also had that British flair to them. So it was a real gradual thing for me and my group to discover our history and what British wrestling was. And all that sort of led into the next generation that was after us. This is all Northwest based, by the way, I'd like to point out, of Jack Gallagher, Zach Gibson, James Drake, you know, Crater, and the list goes on. So it was that thing of almost a bit DIY for us. So that is a good thing and a bad thing. It was a bad thing that we didn't have. We got experience and a learning curve later on in our career, which would have been beneficial to have earlier. But it was also a good thing because it pushed us to do things that were different, to try and creatively find a way how to find our own place. Now, this current generation is fortunate. It's not a back in my day sort of comment, and I hope it doesn't come across as that, but you do have a generation of success stories before you, whether it's the likes of British Strong Style and former Pete Dunne, Tyler Bate, Trent Seven, or a lot of the NXT people in terms of like Travis Banks, Jordan Devlin, or even if it's like Will Ospreay, Zack Sabre Jr., and everyone else. Those guys have made mistakes for you and now have invaluable experience that you can learn from. But that's not to say that they hadn't done the bad before you came around. So it's still really important to look and learn from the people before you. So you are going to have a situation where you'll be at a show and there'll be, you know, someone on the show that's like, oh, I've been doing this for 20 years. And you're probably thinking to yourself, well, I've never heard of you. I've never seen you. Now, that person could well be one of the best wrestlers you've never seen, or could be one of the worst wrestlers you've ever seen. But be respectful, listen to their advice, take it on board. And then it is down to you to go, okay, is that good advice or if that's bad advice? Again, it's this investment in yourself. You need to have confidence in yourself to decipher the good advice and the bad advice, because it will come from, good advice will come from the newest people and bad advice will come with the most from the most experienced people, and vice versa. It's not mutually exclusive of how long someone's been wrestling. There's people that have been wrestling 2 or 3 years and I listen to them speak and I listen to their advice on just wrestling in general, and I take it on board because it's good advice. But you have to learn how to decipher what's good advice and bad advice on your own. But always, always, always seek out an opportunity to learn from the people that have been doing it before you, because there might be nuances or styles or little things that you never thought about and until that person has told you. And that is something that you will carry on going forward, and hopefully to the betterment of your career. Okay, so we kind of have two major points left, with the final one being a little bit more open / loose for interpretation. So the penultimate point is loyalty is a two-way street. This kind of goes on from know your own worth, but it's a tricky subject to talk about. Loyalty is something that is bandied around a lot, not just in wrestling, but the world in general. Whatever job you've got, though, you will have an employer at some point who will question your loyalty because you refuse to do something that they want you to do. And usually they want to you to do something that you go, I don't feel like I'm getting paid enough, or I don't feel that is to the betterment of me. I feel like you're exploiting me for your own betterment. This used to happen a lot in wrestling. It happens less so now, but it still happens. When you're brought in and you're trained by someone, there's certain people that will say, I got you to where you are now. You essentially owe me everything and you need to do everything I say. I'm going to tell you right now, that's fucking bullshit, and tell them to go and fuck themselves and go and find somewhere else to train or someone else to learn from, because that is not how this is meant to work. This is not how this business works. You earn loyalty much like you earn respect. And again, and the reason why I mean it's a two-way street is because it's between the person that is either a promoter or a trainer and you as the talent. Because the promoter has to earn your loyalty as well. Because if they're a promoter that takes care of you, I've always paid you well, always looked out for you and given you advice or done things that is to help you, then that earns my loyalty. There's so many promoters that I could name that I am incredibly loyal to. You know, there's people from I've known for 16 years, or a really good example recently is the Chaos owners in the form of Dave, Nick and Rob. I am forever loyal to them because of the way that they have treated me. And that is a job that I've only had for the last 2 or 3 years, you know, and they treated me with such respect and such professionalism and did business the right way that they have earned my loyalty. And hopefully, they, you know, it's a two-way street for us. And that is something that's really important. And you should be aware of the red flags when a trainer brings up loyalty. Because it is not their right to own you as a commodity or own you as a piece of something that they can hold up and go, look, I am the best at what I do. They should be singing your praises and pushing you and, you know, getting you out there until the cows come home, but they do not have ownership of you. Their role and their job, whether it's a promoter or a trainer, is to give you a platform because they believe in you as a individual or a talent and believe that you should have that platform. That is how you build loyalty, in my opinion. And you might have a situation in your career where you have been continually working for a promoter and you ask them for a pay rise, or you ask that you can go and do another show that's been, you know, another show that's perceived by you as to being a better opportunity or a better paid gig. Obviously, always do that with the most notice you can possibly do, because if it's literally the day of the show or a week before the show, that is pretty bad etiquette. Please have some awareness of releasing dates or asking if you can do something in terms of if you would agreed to doing a show beforehand. But see how that person reacts. If that person is like, that's understandable, no worries, or even if they come back to you and go, look, that is something that we can't do at this time, and explain to you why they can't do that at this time, it is then down to you to determine if that's a good thing or a bad thing. But look and listen to how that person responds to you. If they start going, well, I've given you all these dates and now you're just turning around and turning your back on me, and maybe I could have given you something better, that is not a good attitude to have. And if that you are a young wrestler or a young ref or a young announcer or a young anything in that situation, that is not the way that things are meant to be done. And I will admit this, as someone that is now a booker or someone that's involved in putting shows together, it is incredibly frustrating when talent are unavailable for a show. But at the same time, that's the nature of the business. It is our job to prepare for that or alter plans or come up with another solution to that. That is part of our job. It's part of our role. And therefore, you know, we have to have some understanding. But if you've built up a good rapport with someone, then I know that 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 is a situation where they felt like they are making the correct decision for themselves. And that is something that you have to accept and you have to go, okay, that's fine. Loyalty is not a commodity. You can't take loyalty to the bank and pay your checks or pay your bills or pay for your food on the way back from a show in a service station. Loyalty is worth less than the pound in Europe at the minute in terms of finances. So be careful with how you distribute and receive that loyalty. Always, always just make sure that it is the correct situation and it is done in the correct manner, because you know what true loyalty is when you have it. Okay, final serious point of this show. It is very, very simple. It's three words and it's been used quite a lot on social media, but it's something that I feel so strongly about, and it is this: pay it forward. Okay, I'll say it again: pay it forward. Now, what I mean by that, if you don't know what that term means, it is do something for someone else that is in your industry that you'd like for them to do to you. Here's an example. Adam Pearce it started posting this recently, and he's like, put a picture up of people that have paid it forward for you. All right. One of my favorite stories in the world. I was 16 and I just got on shows. And Chris Travis and a wrestler called Scotty Hex and Ligero and Spud had just come to start doing shows that we'd done. And I didn't really have wrestling gear at the time. I had like what we call amateur boots, which are like little short boxing boots, and kick pads, because of course I was super indie, but I didn't really have my own gear. And it was actually Chris Travis that gave me my first set of wrestling tights / trousers. And I, to this day, have never forgotten that, because that little act of kindness really stuck with me, and I was so appreciative of it. And you know, I spoke to Trav about it, and to him it was just, well, yeah, that's what you do. And that's what I mean by paying it forward. It doesn't have to be a grand gesture, but it has to be a gesture of acknowledgement of, hey, you're my fellow professional, I'm going to try and help you succeed, or I'm trying to help you, you know, continue to work within your passion. And it was a great story that recently come up about Carl Anderson when he was in New Japan, and Shinsuke Nakamura invited him out for a meal, and he kind of was like, oh, I can't really make it. And it basically came out that Carl Anderson had no money, so Shinsuke made him go to the ATM machine and show him his balance, and it was really pitiful. And Shinsuke went, don't worry, I'll take care of you. And it wasn't just for that night. Shinsuke paid for Carl Anderson's meals for like the next half to a full year while he was in the dojo. And it's just that little moment of kindness that really makes the difference. And it can be anything. It can be, hey, have you got any advice for, you know, have you got any advice, or did you watch my match? Is it okay if you watch my match? Is there anything I can do better? And you giving that person good advice, or being the person to ask for it. Again, it's always a two-way street in this. That is paying it forward. I try and watch as much as I possibly can and give advice that I possibly can to anyone that's on the show. Now, I don't feel comfortable I don't feel comfortable commenting on match structure or how to put matches together for wrestlers, because I'm... in my own opinion, very underqualified for that. But I will give advice in terms of things that I liked, or moments in terms of my viewpoint from a commentator or creative or even a ring announcer. Everyone's got a valid viewpoint, but that is something that I try to do. Now, you kind of have to work on communicational skills on this and know when the right time to do it. You know, If you're a veteran, you're constantly walking up to people going, hey, I watched your match, this is what you should do, it's going to come across as a bit dickish. Now, you can go to someone and say, like, hey, I watched your match, is it okay if I give you some feedback? Most people go, yeah, no worries. Some people might say no. And you build a rapport there. But that is what is meant by paying it forward. Someone doing something for you, taking just, whether it's, it doesn't have to be financial, but it's just taking that moment of time to try and pass on a little bit of knowledge of theirs and trying to help you further your career, which is something that I hope this episode will do, and is ultimately the reason that I decided to do this episode. I still don't feel 100% comfortable in positioning myself in a way where I'm giving out advice publicly, because I don't want the perception of me being like, I know better than anyone, because guess what? I don't. I only know what I know. So hopefully this comes across as paying it forward rather than me dictating to you the laws and ways of professional wrestling. But I will tell you now, in my 16 years, those moments, those little gestures of friendliness and niceness are invaluable, and you will never forget those moments. So whether you are on the receiving end of that or you're on the giving end of that, always remember, pay it forward. Always remember that moment that someone gave you, that moment of kindness that helped you. Try to be the person to give that out and to pay it forward. All right, final point, which I said is technically not the final point. It's a bit of a loose one because it's a pretty obvious thing to say. Enjoy it. It's as simple as that. Whether you come to shows and are a fan, whether you watch shows on demand or whatever, if you're a wrestler or someone who's involved in the business or whatever you are, if you are around and taking part in wrestling in any formal way, just please remember to enjoy it. And that's not me trying to be like, hey, never be critical or critique or never say when you don't like things. It's not at all, because those are all valid things. But ultimately, if you stop enjoying something, then it's probably for the best if you take a step back to some degree, whether that's completely walk away or just to go, okay, I need to try and stop doing this because I've stopped enjoying it. And that's something that performers need to have in mind as well. Of, I know we all want to get better and we all want to see improvement and we all want to be successful, but if that is at the cost of enjoyment, then is it worth it? Personally speaking, the reason that I became self-employed was because I had a really good job. I worked in opticians. I was on my way to becoming a fully qualified dispensing optician. If I had stuck to it, I could have grown from there. I could have become a director of an opticians, a branch, and, you know, really worked my way up within that industry. But ultimately, it wasn't my passion. It paid my bills, but it wasn't the thing that I woke up every morning going, oh, I get to go and fit some glasses today. Or, you know, I never woke up and it never got me out of bed. To be quite honest with you, there was a point in my life where it was the polar opposite, where it prevented me getting out of bed. But the one thing that has always motivated me from a purely, like, I am so fortunate and so lucky, is wrestling, and is being a presenter, it is being creative, it is being a commentator, whatever job I'm doing that day, it isn't being involved in something that I genuinely care about and I'm genuinely passionate about. So my biggest bit of advice is, in a generation where it's super cool to not give a shit about anything, give a shit, because it is so valuable to not just yourself, but the people around you. If you care and love the thing that is your passion, or if you're a very fortunate person like myself that is your job, then you are going to be one of the best at what you do. Okay, there you have it. It's a bit rambly. I might need to clean it up in future if I ever revisit this idea, but that's just some advice for yourselves. Now, I've probably said it a million times, and I'm probably hammering down on this point, but I am not an expert. I don't even perceive myself in being exceptional. In fact, I think I'm thoroughly average, and on a good day, I'm probably, a 5.5 out of 10. But the one thing, that I've always had is that I've tried to apply myself 100% and try and work as hard as I possibly can when I'm doing things. And I feel like that's helped me, be, it's weird to say, but it's helped me be, you know, successful, you know, to some people's opinion. Because again, it is opinion, whether it's yours or someone else's. So I don't think you should get bogged down on something if you aren't exceptional at something, especially if it's wrestling, because hard work and passion and perseverance get you as far, if not further, than being exceptionally talented at something. So hopefully some of this advice has just given you a bit of a refocus or a bit of extra motivation to try and take another step in your career. Or if you're taking your first step, take your first step. Or if you're just listening to this as a fan, hopefully it's given you a little bit of insight from my own brain slash opinion and what I think helps be successful within the wrestling industry. All right, well, that's going to be the end of the episode. Thanks for listening. Really appreciate it. Let me know. Give me some feedback on this episode. I'm asking you guys for feedback. See, hey, pay it forward. Yeah, let me know if you liked this episode. I know it was a little bit rambly in places and not as slick as it can be, but hopefully there was a few things in there that you've taken worth from and value from. I'm probably going to do an episode, and then I'm going to be doing another Q&A at the end of the month. Because that went really well and you guys seem to really enjoy it. So I'll put it out probably next week, a thread on Twitter to take some questions. So if you have any questions from this that you want sort of answering, but also don't mind it being on the podcast, then ask me in that thread. So I'll probably put it up next week, the thread. I'll let you know it's coming. And if you've got any questions, I'll try my best to answer them. Because I love answering serious questions, but I also love answering stupid questions as well. So I've really enjoyed the Q&A episodes. And it actually did really well, which caught me off guard a little bit, if I was being honest with you. But it did really well. So it's something I'm going to revisit. So that's probably in 2 weeks' time. Next week is going to be a different episode that I've got, again, I've got a lot of ideas at the minute that I'm just trying to pick and choose the right moments to implement those ideas. As you probably heard last week when I got Jim Smallman on in a very thinly veiled football podcast that I just lied and pretended that it was about wrestling. So if you haven't listened to that episode and you like 90s football, or you want to hear Jim Smallman say really stupid things, and go and check that episode out as well. Check out all the episodes as well that we've done in the past. I really recommend Brian versus Goliath, the series that nearly killed me from all the work I had to do for it, but really enjoyed doing that as well. But in the meantime, take care of yourselves, and we'll see you next week on Tuesday Night Jaw.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.